And she's a singer-songwriter now, but she was a painter and an artist. And now she doodles lint. It's pretty great.
And across the room, it just made me think of the fingernail collection.
Right.
So it's a little box about a foot square with a glass front and lots of little vials of nail clippings.
Right. It's nicely graphically displayed of something. The only thing in the show that kind of grossed me out, but I knew as soon as I knew it grossed me out, I knew I had to have it for the show. And I think they are finger and toenail clippings, a 15-year supply.
Yeah, this is Nora Bartlett.
Nova.
Sorry, Nova Bartlett.
Right.
That's a real person, right?
That's a real person.
Nova, I never heard that name before.
Yeah, well, La Nova is
her
real name.
And she goes to pains to make it clear that they're clean. She cleans her nails before she clips.
Right, she is a very clean person, but a very graphically interesting person and a very interesting person on her own right. And that's one thing that I try to do with the Faux Museum is I try not to judge people. And all sorts of people come by and they're not hipsters, or maybe they look like hipsters, but maybe they look like a farmer. And they're really interesting people. There's so many interesting people with so many interesting hobbies or ways of seeing. And that's part of it. I mean, Nova's an interesting person, doesn't look like anything like Ellie or, you know, anybody else in there. But I thought that was odd, the nail clipping, and it gets attention, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And another little collection is wishbones.
Right.
So at this point, I'm starting to see things, and I don't really know how they're connected. Like, are they from the same person? But you've got, like, stubby pencils, you know, pencils that have become too short to use but haven't been thrown away. And then there's somebody's, it just says, Mother's Yearly Christmas Coat Corsage. And there's about five of these kind of plastic and metal corsages.
Right.
From the old days.
There's a lot of people that just kind of dropped off collections and just small collections. And some of the collections are collections that people bought. Maybe somebody was going to throw them away.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, don't throw those away. You know, they saw the beauty in those things. And when you separate things out from their everyday life, a lot of things are really beautiful and interesting. Every little object was made, you know, for a reason with design. And when you separate them out and look at them and try to appreciate them, and I think that's all of those things are like that. And we have another pencil in the show in the International Museum of Littered Ephemera collection. And it's short and stubby, but it was run over many times by vehicles, and so the wood is now paper-like. It's still there, but if you touch it, it feels like paper. And I collected that, and I saw that as beautiful. But it's just this garbage on the street.
Did you say literary ephemera or litter ephemera?
Littered.
Littered. Okay,
yes.
That's in the rubbish corner, right?
IMOL, the International Museum of Littered Ephemera, which is a museum I've had in boxes for a couple decades at least.
Oh, okay. So you've been collecting litter, or people have been sending it to you for a while?
Yes. Yeah.
And you just tacked some of it up on the wall in the corner?
Yes.
What was the deal? I mean, some of it is like real litter, like a squashed cup. Some of it is interesting, like a kind of cute girl photograph.
Well, all of it was on the ground. All of it was littered someplace, not in a trash barrel, but on the ground, found in Hawaii or France or China or, you know, Portland. And you just take it out of the context and it becomes funny or ironic or interesting or poignant. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of gloves. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of gloves, and I found a glove the other day and added it in.
So you got boxes of litter?
I do.
And how did you pick just maybe 50 items out of your boxes?
I had a certain amount of area, and I put up my stuff last, and I was going to see how much area I had, and I just put up a few things that seemed kind of interesting.
And it's in a little corner where there's music on computers. What's that music?
Well, that's one of the sound pods from the Faux Museum. We have three of them, and it it's a composed non-narrative audio and video 15-minute loop that is all sorts of music and images and sounds that I found or sounds that I recorded. Most of it was when I was living in Seattle. I was living up there for a while, and so I got a recorder because I just wanted to hear sounds separated out. And initially that was called Whole Lot of Love, because my image was that I wanted to find sounds and then compose them together to make Led Zeppelin's Whole Lot of Love. But that seemed to be impossible once I got started. So it became something different, but it's all composed.
You were finding analog sounds and recording them onto tape or onto chip?
Right, onto an electronic tape recorder. But there are also music, Ukulele Lady, some, you know, really old music, or singing music from Singing in the Rain, old found video of the 1907 Market Street in San Francisco, you know, some Monty Python images, some Olympic images, and just stuff I composed together. There's a lot of moonwalking going on. I mean, I love Michael Jackson, but there were all sorts of people that were doing moonwalking before him. Nobody probably did it as well as him, but there, Mr. Bojangles was on there. He used to do a type of moonwalk, and Neil Armstrong was on there also doing his moonwalk.
Is that section called the Oracle of Metallic Media?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's another oracle, the Oracle of Chimes on the Athabascan Plain. It's a little room you go in with big thick bamboo hanging from the ceiling that you can touch and make sounds.
Right. And all of those sounds were composed by a friend of mine, kind of a genius friend of mine that did a lot of the computer work, Ali Connery. And all of them are new sounds. There's like five or six sounds. Each bamboo has a different sound. And it's affected by vibration, but also by electricity, humidity, and I don't know what else. They go off sometimes when they're not supposed to. They just start singing. But usually if you touch them, sometimes you have to tap them or even hit them. But usually if you can just touch them and they'll make their sounds.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Tom Richards of the Faux Museum. He's talking about the new show, Collections and Anomalies, Public and Privates, which runs through May 26th. Tom, you're a librarian by trade, is that correct?
That's right. That's right.
So there's a great section of found notes from libraries. And yeah, it's just like Davy Rothbart's Found magazine, because some of the notes are so funny. Trying to remember what my favorite one was. It was a shopping list. It was something like oats, bread, alcohol, and something like paint.
Right. Yeah, they're all real lists, and there's some really good things. I was a public librarian in Seattle and also worked at the Seattle Art Museum, but a public librarian. And in the computer area, there's what we call P-slips, the little slips of paper that you write your notes on, and people take notes on them. But teenagers make notes to pass back and forth. It's basically teenagers or preteens, And there's some very funny notes. And there's also, it's separated into two halves. There's the public library and there's the school library. My co-curator this time is Wendy Geisler. And she works at a high school library. And so a lot of the stuff is found from the high school library. And there's some very funny things.
Will you go out on a date with me, yes or no?
Yes.
Like a form.
But there was no answer on that one, I noticed.
Is that the main library in Seattle with the big kind of kid-friendly area?
I worked at branches. I was a branch librarian. I actually worked at every single library in the Seattle public library system except for the Southwest Library, because it was under construction when I was a temporary librarian. And I worked at the Central Library, but mainly at the Northgate Library and at the Queen Anne Libraries. I love being a branch librarian. It's nice.
I found that note. It was oats, lettuce, alcohol, bread.
There was another list about jobs, and it was in a cute little girl's handwriting, maybe like 18, with like smiley faces and circles above the eyes, and she was talking about possible jobs, and I don't remember most of the jobs, but they were like, you know, Arby's, you know, the grocery store, and then movie theater, and then in the middle of it, just in the middle, and it continued on after this normal, but she had strip club.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, I mean, it is an option in Portland, and probably 50% of the jobs are from strip clubs.
There's another bit of they're just these gloves. They're like embroidered gloves, fingerless.
Yes.
I don't know what they're from. Some kind of cowgirl thing.
No, they're that's a collection that came in kind of anonymously. So I won't talk about the person whose gloves they were, but she became sick and very frail, and later died. And but she made these, her hands, I think, were maybe disfigured a little bit, and she made these fingerless gloves and embroidered them just kind of beautifully. They're really interesting and very unique. And then when she died, that collection came to a friend of hers. And so she made those kind of to make the best of her situation. And they're really kind of beautiful.
A museum in Cambridge, England, sent in 44 cotton wool swabs. They're like large Q-tips
right.
that we used to clean a kind of couple hundred year old Buddha statue. At this point, I'm thinking, what's the value of old Q-tips to us rather than to the people who use them?
I think Mark from the Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology in Cambridge was a visitor to the Faux Museum last summer, and he liked it so much. And so I contacted him and said, do you want to be part of this show? And he saw a show. I mean, a Faux Museum is a conceptual art museum. And so he saw a more conceptual show, a show that was pretty out there, and he liked it. And so he sent a more conceptual piece. But those are near sacred Q-tips, cleaning tools. And I think perhaps the dirt on those is probably the most valuable thing in the entire show. It's almost sacred. It's once it was donated to the museum, the piece was no longer sacred. But prior to that, so I mean, it's in a prior sacredness there.
Mm-hmm. So, and then the kind of one side of the museum is sort of fenced off, because then you just got a kind of avalanche of different things. You got big paint brushes, dice, collections of plastic dinosaurs. There's a big glass jar of bottle tops that look like beer bottle tops.
Mm-hmm.
Peeled beaver twigs.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason they're all kind of lumped in together?
We made a lot of kind of aesthetic choices. Actually, the socks were the very first thing that went up on the wall, and everything kind of came from that, emanated away from the socks.
Tell us about the socks.
Well, the socks were from a friend of mine, Trace Shannon, who's a voodoo donut person, and he, over a course of like 10 or 15 years, like we all do, I think, kept his socks that didn't match, and he set them aside, and then hoping later that the sock would come back that matched it. And there are probably 100 socks there. I'm not sure. I saw you counting them. I don't know how many there are, but there's a lot up on the wall, and then there's a basket full below it. And he gave them to me as socks that didn't match, but I found one matching pair. And so if you're listening, Trace, you can come over. I have that one pair if you need that. But basically none of the others matched. And so I don't know. It's just a curiosity. Who would save that? Well, actually, I save some. I don't have that many, though. I give up before. I'm not as I don't have the tenacity that Trace has. And look at the success that he's had. I have to learn from that. I have to keep my socks.
Yeah, it's a lot of tube socks. I expect that's going to change now. It's going to be all Icebreaker and REI.
Well, it's funny because there's a yellow sock and a couple of pink socks that I remember him wearing years ago. I go, oh, yeah, I remember those socks.
And there's also his friend Cat Daddy. Right. Has a bunch of cufflinks.
And fraternal pins, too. They used to belong to the Eagles. And so there's like 5 years of Eagles pins, and a lot of it, he has a lot of cufflinks. He has a lot of really nice cufflinks. And, and so that's in a glass case near there, yes.
I think the best thing in it is this, the collection of piano treasures. So somebody who fixes old pianos found toys down the back of the piano, because little kids do that, apparently.
Right. I think all sorts of people do. But there are a lot of toys and little things in there, and because kids don't really want to be playing the piano. They want to be outside, and so they get a little fidgety probably and throw things in there. But that's Martha's collection from Immortal Piano. That's the piano shop on like 40th and Belmont, and it's a really great collection. We don't even have it all up. It's just an amazing collection that she's got through the years.
So this is like marbles, little toy cars, plastic figures.
Exactly. It's all, I mean, it's a lot of small figurines or dice or, you know, I don't know. There's so many things. There's just there's hundreds of them.
I think that's better, stronger, because it has a context. It has a literal context of, you know, these things are found in a box, a piano, and then there's this other story about it, right? And then there's the story of her finding a warehouse full of pianos and saving them from a scrap heap and fixing them.
Right. She was another person who came into the museum, liked the museum, and wanted to be part of it. And I said, well, I got an idea, you know, this is my next show. And she says, well, I collect things that I found in when I restore pianos, when I refurbish pianos. And I said, that sounds interesting. And it is. It was very interesting.
Do you think it's more interesting than the large ball of rubber bands?
I don't want to make a value judgment, because when people come in, they point to all different types of things that they like. I mean, maybe they like the saber-toothed tiger skull. Maybe they like the napkin collection or the museum from the or the collection from the Oregon Nikkei Legacy Museum or the cufflinks or you know, a lot of people like the keyboard. And so it's just what strikes people, you know, that day, or it brings back a memory. You know, it's like Proust, the smelling thing. Certain things bring back memories, and that's usually the thing that people like. I mean, maybe somebody collected rubber bands, or their grandmother did, and that brings back, you know, memories, and then that might be their favorite, you know. And context is important, but people supply some of the context.
You've got a shop in there, and I guess you get to listen to music whenever you want, because often it's just you. So you brought something in for us to listen to. Let's hear it. That was Arvo Pärt's Spiegel im Spiegel. And that's beautiful. Do you get to listen to whatever you want all day?
Oh, I do. And like on this show, I haven't listened to as much music because there's a lot of stuff going on in the show, and I want people to hear that rather than my music. But sometimes I play music, and I like to play a lot of different, wide variety. Mm-hmm. I actually don't listen to Arvo Pärt in the museum unless I'm the only one there, because it's I like to listen to it. Mm-hmm. And other music I like to listen while I'm doing things. I like to listen to Chibo Amado or Nina Simone or all sorts of music.
Is running a conceptual art museum like your lifelong dream? How did you get to
it? It was my lifelong nightmare. I mean, yeah, it was an obsession. I was working at the library, making good money, getting good benefits, and I just kept thinking about this museum. I actually did it 20 years ago and had to stop because of family health reasons back then. But I'd just been thinking about it, and I thought, how can I get rid of my money? I know, I'll get back to Portland and start the phone museum again. And so I have.
So it's spelled FAUX, faux, the French word for false. But I guess it is a museum, if you call it one.
It is a museum. I mean, museums and everybody nowadays claims everything they say are true. Faux just happens to be the old family name. And if people want to think it means false, they can think that, because who am I to tell the truth, you know? But it's also a critical thinking museum with a sense of humor, so people can make their own judgments on the name or the museum.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Tom Richards, talking about the Faux Museum and the new show there called Collections and Anomalies, Public and Privates. It runs through May 26th, and if you go there, it's in Old Town, 2nd and Davis. Thank you very much for coming in, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Tell me what you want.
See you doing good. I don't wanna get rich, leave you in the hood. Girl, in my eyes, you the baddest. The reason why I love you, you don't like me, cause my status. I don't wanna see you with a carriage, living average. I wanna do my thing so we be established. And I don't want you rocking the
Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the JHS Annual Multicultural Film Festival's presentation of Two Americans. This documentary considers the status of undocumented immigrants in light of Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio's civil rights violations. This showing of Two Americans will be facilitated by Mr. Freddy Trujillo, who will lead the discussion following the movie. Two Americans will be shown at the North Portland Neighborhood Library at 512 North Killingsworth, on Tuesday, April 8th, starting at 6 p.m. More information on this event can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to news headlines at noon in English and in Spanish for Tuesday, April 1st. This is KBOO, and I'm Kelly Sunrose. The International Court of Justice handed down a decision yesterday regarding Japanese whaling in the Antarctic Circle. The UN's highest court found that Japan's whaling program in the Southern Ocean was not for scientific purposes and therefore not lawful. The International Court of Justice ordered that Japan revoke any permits for whaling in the Southern Ocean that it had already issued and to cease issuing future permits. Under the program at issue before the court, Japan has captured more than 10,000 whales in the Southern Ocean since 1988 under the auspices of scientific research and in spite of a ban on commercial whaling passed by the International Whaling Commission in 1986 due to overhunting and threats of extinction. The loophole through which Japan had continued to hunt whales was for the collection of data regarding the impact of whales on Japan's fishing industry and the health and habitat of whale populations. The court found that little scientific data had actually been collected and ordered Japan to stop whaling in the Southern Ocean under the current program. The lawsuit was filed against Japan by Australia in 2010. The ruling does not affect Japan's whaling programs in the Northern Pacific. An explosion at a liquefied natural gas storage facility in southeast Washington injured 5 workers and resulted in the evacuation of the town of Plymouth, Washington, yesterday. According to the spokesman for the Benton County Sheriff's Office, a pipeline exploded at the Williams Companies Incorporated LNG facility. Environmental groups and concerned citizens continue to fight the development of additional LNG terminals in the Northwest. You've been listening to news headlines at noon on KBOO. I'm Kelly Sunrose. For more global, national, and local news produced right here in our Portland, Oregon studio, tune in weekdays at 5 p.m.
A continuación, un resumen de noticias de lo más sobresaliente al momento. El periódico The Washington Post publicó el día de hoy una investigación que revela la brutalidad en los métodos de investigación de la Agencia Central de Inteligencia, CIA. El texto señala que la CIA llevaba a cabo prácticas consideradas como torturas y que no informó de forma adecuada de ello a los legisladores. Esta filtración sale a la luz pública 3 semanas después de que la presidenta del Comité de Inteligencia del Senado, Dianne Feinstein, acusara a la CIA públicamente de espiar de manera ilegal las computadoras del Senado. Se termina el plazo de compra de seguros médicos promovidos por el gobierno federal como parte de la reforma sanitaria llevada a cabo por el gobierno del presidente Barack Obama. Este lunes es un momento decisivo para determinar el éxito o el fracaso de esta reforma que pretende ampliar la cobertura a los 48 millones de estadounidenses que no están asegurados. Según datos proporcionados por la Casa Blanca, 6 millones de ciudadanos han adquirido un seguro, pero aún no se sabe cuántos no estaban asegurados previamente. Se eleva a 28 el número de decesos tras el deslave ocurrido en Washington el pasado 22 de marzo. Las pérdidas financieras se calculan en 10 millones de dólares aproximadamente y cerca de 30 familias necesitan asistencia para reubicarse y restablecer nuevos hogares. La Marina Armada de México informó sobre la presunta muerte de Enrique Plancarte, uno de los líderes de la organización criminal de los Caballeros Templarios. Plancarte, también conocido como el Señor de los Caballos, aparentemente fue abatido el día de hoy en la comunidad de Colón, en Querétaro. La Secretaría de Gobernación informó en su cuenta de Twitter que se sigue investigando sobre la identidad de Plancarte, quien es uno de los personajes más buscados por el Gobierno Federal de México. El Ejército Zapatista de Liberación Nacional anunció la realización de un encuentro nacional de pueblos originarios que se llevará a cabo en alguno de sus caracoles durante mayo y en Oventic el 1 de junio. El subcomandante Marcos podría estar presente para junio si es que su salud se lo permite. Además, este seminario contará con la participación de intelectuales como Pablo González Casanova y Adolfo Gili, entre muchos otros. Esto fue todo por el momento. Les reportó Tania Gómez Daza.
gente.